The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. You're probably familiar with the passage in Luke 10 when Jesus goes to the home of Mary and Martha and they're preparing a meal for him. But Martha slips away, seated at the Lord's feet, Mary does, listening to his word. And Martha is in the kitchen by herself, and she gets very upset about it. And she came to the Lord, and she said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me." But the Lord answered and said to her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things. But only one thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her." I was thinking about that, people being worried and bothered. That kind of describes what's going on in our culture today, especially in the younger generation. And so I have a great treat today to interview Dr. Tom Rainer. Dr. Tom Rainer is a prolific author. He's the founder and CEO of Church Answers. With 40 years of ministry experience, Tom has spent a lifetime committed to the health and growth of the local church and its leaders. I love the way Tom Rainer writes because it's very easy to understand some big concepts he's trying to get across. And his latest book is entitled The Anxious Generation Goes to Church: What the Research Says About What Younger Generations Need and Want from Your Church. So Tom, welcome to the program today.
Thank you so much, Jeff. And I was wondering what the segue was going to be with the passage you read. You did well, my friend. You did well.
Well, I thought, you know, Martha's might have been a little different, but she was worried and bothered. And I think we have a lot of worried, anxious people today, as the research has shown. And so just the title alone, The Anxious Generation Goes to Church. Tell me where that title came from.
Well, the title Anxious Generation is not original with me. I'll tell you a story, Jeff. I guess it's a little over a year ago. I was getting ready to hit the keyboard to write a book, and Tyndale has been a great publishing partner, and it was time for another book to get started. So I started on it, and I'm writing away, and I just stop. And it's not writer's block. I almost feel like this was Holy Spirit stop instead of writer's block. But I just pause for a moment and just could not write anything else. And during that time, I went to my iPhone and I saw about a new book that was being released by a secular Jew by the name of Jonathan Haidt. And Jonathan Haidt is a professor in New York State, and he is brilliant, but he is not a believer. But he wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. So first thing I want to give credit to is when we talk about my book, The Anxious Generation Goes to Church, obviously I started with the first three words were his book. Mm-hmm. And so I ordered it on Amazon, and I'm in a place where it's possible, sometimes likely, to get an Amazon delivery within hours. And I ordered the book, and it was at my doorstep within 3 or 4 hours. And wow. So I started reading it 5, 6 p.m., I can't remember. And somewhere around 3 or 4 a.m., I said, "I need a nap." So I took a nap, woke up, and then after I woke up, I finished the book. Now, that says a lot of things. One, it's a reflection of my somewhat stupidity in staying up all night reading a book at my age. So that was one thing it reflected. But it also reflected how much that book captivated me and captured. Uh-huh. Because Jonathan Haidt was telling us that there's a generation among us that is so anxious that it is literally killing them. And the data was just overwhelming. And when I say literally, I mean many of these are showing up, and many of these young people are showing up in emergency rooms with self-harm. Suicide rates was jumping, is jumping among this generation. Depression, anxiety, which of course is the anxious generation. And I just pause for a moment, because I have 10 living grandchildren. One is with the Lord, but of my 10 living grandchildren, five are part of Gen Z, which the book primarily represents, and five are part of Gen Alpha, which follows Gen Z. And I said, God, really in a prayer, I really need to look at this more deeply. So I looked a little more deeply. I sent an email off to Tyndale, and I said, can we pivot? I said, I would like to do a massive research from a Christian worldview, from a church focus, about reaching this generation that is so anxious. That was the impetus behind, you asked, now Jeff, I got to be careful. You just asked me a title and I hadn't stopped talking just about it.
That's okay, Tom. Okay, so if you were to sum up Haidt's book, just the main thrust that really captivated you, what would you say about that?
Very simple. The smartphone raised these kids during their most formative time in adolescence. They were in front of a screen, but that smartphone also had social media attached to it. And the fact that they had this powerful computer in their pocket, or many times right before their very eyes, attached to social media, destroyed may be an overstatement, but it shaped their minds so much that they have turned into anxious. They have turned into desperate young people like we have never seen before, because we've never had a generation go through adolescence with a smartphone with social media. It's those two combinations that were just absolutely lethal. And it has changed society through these young people. Now, you and I will go on social media at times and say, oh, that's a bunch of bad news. It's different than it being shaped at the formative time of adolescence. And that's what was happening to these Gen Zers, and now to Gen Alpha. Their minds are being shaped. And so I ask this question, what would happen if we could start getting these young people into our churches? What might happen? And that became the thesis in the research. Haidt obviously didn't research them going to church, although somewhat surprisingly, he did mention, maybe briefly, but he did mention, I wish churches would come around and help them. I'm paraphrasing what he said.
Tom, when we talk about Gen Z and Gen Alpha, just for our listeners, what ages are we talking about in there?
Born 1997 to 2012 for Gen Z, born 2013 to present for Gen Alpha.
Okay. Well, I know I talked to one guy one time that spent a lot of time with students, and he said, you know, what they deal with, the potential to do something stupid at school and then have it broadcast everywhere because people have their phones and their video taping, and whether it's a fight or somebody is embarrassed, and then it's broadcast for everyone to see, and then it goes viral. And he said, you know, students are in fear of that on a constant basis. One of the things that's brand new in Texas, Tom, I don't know if you knew about this, but they can't have their phones in class anymore. They have to leave them in the car or leave them at home.
That was Haidt's recommendation. And some educators started picking up on Haidt saying this. I think it's a great thing. Let me just give you one example. You talked about things that happened that embarrass them or humiliate them. There's a lot of bullying that's going on social media. It used to be just in person. Now it can happen 24/7. As I was writing this book, a young lady from Birmingham, Alabama, I believe she was a senior in high school, woke up one morning to find out that a nude photo of her had been posted by a classmate. It was not real, just the face. Everything else was manufactured. And I have not followed up to find out what happened to that young lady, but can you imagine? I mean, she did nothing. It was just her face that appeared on a photo that was not real. And the young man who did it has gotten in serious trouble. But that's one example of cyberbullying that's been taking place. And I did not even know that type of thing was taking place. I mentioned to you my 10 grandchildren. All 10 of my grandchildren cannot go on social media with their smartphones until they get out of the house. They're allowed to have basically a cell phone that texts, but they cannot do social media till they're 18. All three of my sons and their wives made that decision somewhat independently.
Mm. That's important. And it's hard because all their friends have access, and so the parents seem like the ogres and that kind of thing, and so they're kind of getting it from both sides. I think it's very hard to parent today. You and I, you're just a little older than I am, Tom. I'm 63. But when we were raising our kids, it's nothing like the challenge of raising kids today.
It is nothing. And I look at what my sons and their wives have to do. And you know this, Jeff. My grandchildren are the best grandchildren in the whole world. There's never been any of them that's better than mine. But their parents are doing an incredible job of raising them. And I'm close to all of them, but one, the oldest grandchild, who's about to turn 16, lives near me. And so we have conversations a lot, and I hear up close, even a child in a good home, a Christian home, that has loving parents, and I hear the things that he has to experience. And I'm thinking, my goodness, that never happened to me. I got beat up on the playground a couple of times, but nothing like he had happened to him.
Well, okay, so you read the book by Height, and it really bursts in you this desire to do the research and write it from a Christian perspective. What did the research show? Was it something different than what you expected?
Yes. And in fact, I might even say dramatically different. So Jeff, let's back up to phase one of the research. Phase one of the research was in some ways mimicking what Height did, but I wanted to go back and do my own research on the data, so I went to the original data that he had. And in simple terms, everything I found out confirmed what he was saying in the Anxious Generation book, the first book, that the level of self-harm among this generation, the level of anxiety measurements, and there's very specific data in his book and mine, the level of depression, the level of suicide, not only suicide attempts, but successful, if you will, suicide. All of those things have solid data sources, and it's not just a gradual rise. It is a dramatic spike. You look at some of the charts, say in my book, and you look at the rise, and you know, sometimes it's more than 100%, more than double what it has normally been. We've never seen anything like it. So the first part of my research confirmed that information from Height, though I added some of the parts to it. But it was the second part of the research that we conducted independently at Church Answers. And I may end up telling some of this story in our next segment, so I'm going to get us started right here. But one thing I wanted to find out is, can we find out empirically what happens if this person whose mind has been shaped, mind has been formed in adolescence so much by the smartphone and by social media, can we get an idea that maybe the local church, through the power of the Holy Spirit and the person of Jesus Christ, that the local church can offer something to put this course of destruction in a different direction? And so when it was all said and done, the second part of that research was actually digging into data, and with Church Answers Research, part of our company, Church Answers Research, actually beginning to find out from the Gen Zers, we didn't interview Gen Alpha, but the Gen Zers, the older teenagers to younger 20s at the time, to find out, okay, have you gone to church? And if so, what has been the effect of this? And one of the reasons I wanted to do it was that book indicated from Height that he thought the church would be good for them, even though he's an agnostic Jew. And then we had people like Elon Musk, who says he's a cultural Christian. What that means, it means he's not a follower of Christ, but it just means that he thinks that the church and Christianity needs to step up to the plate. But anyway, I'm going to just kind of stop right now, because I have a lot of information I would like to share with you on the other side, where we begin to talk about, okay, what did the research say and what are the implications for our churches?
Very good. We're talking to Dr. Tom Rainer. His brand new book is called The Anxious Generation Goes to Church, what the research says about what younger generations need and want from your church. You're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. This is a very important subject. I encourage you to check this book out, go online and check it out, and especially for your student pastors and pastors to know what's going on in the hearts and minds of the young people. We'll be right back after the break.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and we're talking to Dr. Tom Rainer. His book is called The Anxious Generation Goes to Church. We are seeing unprecedented statistics on the younger people in our world, and anxiety levels, suicide attempts, suicide successes, just awful things cutting and just people just kind of tied up in knots, I think, Tom, is one way we could say it. Things that we didn't experience as kids growing up, going to public school. I'm assuming you went to public school as a kid?
Both public and private, both and.
So everybody knows what it's like to deal with a bully. You know, there were people at school that made your stomach turn and, oh, I hope they don't pick on me. Hope they don't do that. Some of that is part of growing up, but, that's gotten to a whole different level, things that we never experienced before. You write, Tom, that Gen Z teens are growing up slowly. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that they're not reaching a maturation level that has been common in previous generations. And one of the reasons that they have not is that their minds have not allowed them to grow up. Their minds have not been shaped in the way that would be normal, like for you, Jeff, or for me, or even for our children. My oldest child is 45. My youngest child is 40. I got three sons. And the way that they grew up is just differently. They grew up at... I don't want to say anything is normal, because that would suggest that any of your listeners, if they had a different situation, that they're different. That's not what I'm going to say. But you think about a typical child 20, 30 years ago, and that child had the progression that he or she would go through high school, then maybe they would go on to college, and they would be moving out of the home at that time, and they would be developing their own personality that was more adulthood than childhood, that they would be growing more and more independent. Well, not so with Gen Z, not so with the anxious generation. This generation is growing up slowly, and so much of it has been the maturation of the mind, the shaping of the mind is a big factor in how fast we grow up. And they have not been, to say they have not been allowed to grow up normally might suggest they don't have any free will, but I will just simply say this. The smartphone and social media is so pervasive today, it is highly difficult for them to grow up like our children and our grandchildren, or our children grew up, not our grandchildren.
Okay, so Tom, when the iPhone and the smartphone came out, were you nervous about the implications of that? Could you kind of see down the road that this could be a bad thing for, especially for younger people?
I did not. I wish I could say I was prophetic and wise enough that I did, but I did not. And let me give you a little bit of that background. You and I are old enough to remember the introduction of the internet. Mm-hmm. You might even remember your first email address. Mm-hmm. I mean, mine was tomrainer@aol.com. I mm-hmm. mean, I can hear the modem making that weird as I signed on. There were these doomsdayers who said the internet is about to destroy our society. I was not among them. I had little doubt that there would be evil on the internet. I had little doubt that it would be used in such ways that were ungodly and, to repeat myself, evil. But I did not think it was going to be such a cultural disruption that it would destroy us. And so I said, all of you are worrying too much. It's our culture will adapt, our churches will adapt, and quite frankly, Jeff, they did. I mean, you can always point to exceptions about how the internet messed up some things, but you can point to an analog world where things got messed up as well. So when the internet came along, I was not worried, and that, for the most part, was a correct perception. Now, what happens after the internet comes along? After the internet comes along, the smartphone. All of a sudden, I can remember being a college freshman. I really can. It's been a long time ago, but I can remember that. I can remember being a college freshman learning computer programming with key punch cards on IBM 360 that was as big as a living room. Now, these kids have this phone that is more powerful than that IBM 360. Mm-hmm. They have all this computing power, and I'm beginning to think, well, is that good? Well, it didn't worry me that much. But then the next phase, from internet to smartphone, the next phase was social media going on the smartphone. Mm-hmm. That was the lethal combination. I did not predict it. I did not understand how bad the damage would be. I was not prophetic. I probably was not wise, because that is what happened to these young people. They had the combination of internet, total access, smartphone, all that power in a pocket, but now social media coming into the smartphone. We often forget that the smartphones did not come into being with social media. It came about 3 years later. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that the lethal damage began its process, which we haven't even noticed until recent years, and it has been horrendous.
Well, Tom, when you talk about the four big threats to the younger generation, explain those to us, if you would.
It's part of the process that I was just noting, that those threats were first the internet. Now you have the superhighway. And by the way, I love the metaphor of the information superhighway, because that reminds me of the Roman roads where the gospel traveled. And you know, a lot of gospel has traveled over this information superhighway. So it hasn't all been bad. But right. the first part of that was the internet that I just mentioned. Again, when the iPhone became the first smartphone, there was only iPhone initially. Many people think that there's always been Android, but it just started off with iPhone. But when the iPhone came along, I thought to myself, you know, that is neat. But that was phase two, and that was the second big thing that was hurting. But then phase three, here comes the social media on that. And then phase four, which we haven't even discussed, did this cause the situation to get worse, or did the situation cause it to get worse? Where's the cause and effect? And that situation is the polarization of our society. Mm-hmm. The polarization of people in politics and religion and anywhere else. You put that combination together and it is lethal.
Mm. Well, you write that the smartphones are designed to be addictive. The manufacturer wants them to be addictive. Why is this not addressed as a mental health issue in our country?
It is. Just not enough listeners. It has become a major mental health issue. There have actually been congressional hearings about this, and I wish and pray and hope that it will get more pervasive, because it has been a destructive mental health issue. And part of what we're hearing, TikTok has gotten a lot of the attention because it is not American owned, but it's also been the old person's social media, Facebook. But some of the real polarization was on Twitter and now X. But it is being addressed, but a lot of people are not paying attention to it until recently. But Jeff, we're beginning to see a movement about this, and I think it will continue.
So, Tom, in your research, what did you find? How young are kids today that have access to their own cell phone?
It used to be you could look at it around 12 years old, but now it can be as young as 8 or 9 or even 10 as far as an entry point into the phone. Now, I cannot tell you, Jeff, how many of those young people also have social media access, which would be determinative about how powerful this might be. But the bottom line is a lot of young kids have it.
So if you were to have young kids today, Tom, what kind of restrictions would you put on social media, cell phones, things like that?
You're going to make me go barefoot in the snow again. Even though I was raised in South Alabama, and we didn't even know what snow was hardly at all. But what I would do, I would follow the pattern that my own children and daughters-in-law are. And it is, I would allow them to have that phone around age 12. Why? Because the general communication that takes place among young people is texting. Now, I would make them put it up at night, and I love what my children do. They say usually around 8 or 9 o'clock, the phone goes in the kitchen and it stays there, and you don't pick it up to take to your bedroom or anything like that, and you can pick it up the next morning. Most of my children are in schools now where they are collecting the smartphone at the beginning of the school day and giving it back. So it is held back there. So I like the trends that are taking place, but that's what I would do. Maybe around 12 or 13. Some people would say that's too young, Tom, but if it's a not smart smartphone, if it's primarily a text-based phone, I think that it would be okay. And I would agree. Now, you're going to have some people who will push back, Jeff, but I would agree that I would not let my children in my household have social media on a smartphone. That will be their decision. It will be a right of adulthood. It will be a passage of adulthood. And I would definitely hold back on that at least until they're 15 or 16. But I like where what my sons and daughters-in-law are doing. They're saying, all right, we're going to hold this phone, and you can have it during the day at key times, but you're not going to have social media until you're out of the house. And it'll be your rite of passage.
Tom, did the research show that the social media and the phone aspect, is that harder for girls than boys, or boys than girls?
Harder for girls. The smartphone with social media, the biggest damage that is done is self-image. And self-image is a key issue for the girls. Not that it's not for the boys, but the boys have more things that they would look at. So the girls have been the ones who have been tragically hit the most in this. They're the ones with the highest depression. They're the ones with the highest rates of suicide, not so much, but depression and anxiety, definitely so. Now, here's what I hope we can get to, and I know we got another break before we go to this, but Jeff, there is a lot of hope in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been very negative thus far. I've been talking about all this damage that is happening is true. I've been talking about all of this challenges that are happening and how parents are having a tough time raising their kids, and why social media is doing what it's doing, especially through the smartphone. But what has happened in the midst of this is one of the greatest opportunities for the gospel.
Well, Tom, as you write, the anxious generation goes to church. I guess the question would arise from that, is the anxious generation going to church? Are we seeing these people in church?
You know, at the pace we are going now, Jeff, the anxious generation may be the first generation in a century where more people are Christians and more are going to church. And if you had asked Tom Rainer, who's been a researcher longer than most people have been alive, if you had asked Tom Rainer, was that going to be a reality, say, 4 or 5 years ago? I'd say, no, we're headed straight down the path of secular Europe. We're not going to see any growth in Christianity. But God seems to be having other plans, and especially with Gen Z. We'll see more with Gen Alpha as they begin to get toward an age of greater maturity. But Gen Z, we're now beginning to see more people become followers of Christ. We are now seeing more of them come to church. And what is neat about this is when the anxious generation goes to church, they do see the hope of Jesus, but they're seeing a lot of functional things take place that are changing their lives for the best. And I just want to shout to pastors, to student ministers, to church leaders, to elders, to deacons, to church members, hey, you got an opportunity. What did Jesus say? He didn't say, we cannot find anybody rich with the gospel. He said, there's a lot of people out in those fields. Mm-hmm. We don't have to pray for opportunities. We have to pray for workers to go into the fields.
Right.
So in Matthew 9 in parallel passages, that's the command. In many ways, it's always been there. But now the challenge for the local church is to get our people going into the fields to reach these very receptive people.
Tom, from a pastor standpoint and preaching standpoint, why is this information so important for a pastor to understand? Because a guy in his 50s and his 60s, he's not thinking along those lines, just like you didn't think along those lines till you read that book by Height. What is the key for us as pastors to glean from this?
Several years ago, I wrote a little book called The Hope Initiative. Pray and Go, for a resource called The Hope Initiative. My purpose is not to promote my book. My purpose is to answer your question. One of the things that we did with The Hope Initiative is it's a 30-day study. And the idea of the 30-day study is if you focus on this scripture, if you do these prayers, maybe if you walk in your neighborhood and pray for homes as you walk through, if you do something for 30 days, you're going to see a mind shift and a culture shift take place. So I've been asked the question that you've been asked many times by pastors and other church leaders. Okay, where do we begin? And while Pray and Go, the book that is part of the Hope Initiative, is not a magic bullet or silver bullet, it does answer the question. Let's get the mindset change. Let's get culture change. And once that happens, the people will then say, what do I do next? And the work of the Holy Spirit will in many ways push them toward that. Now, when we come back at the in the next segment, remind me if I can to tell you a story about a church that had so many old people, all it could think about was when it was going to shut the doors.
Okay.
And what happened then when this church began to reach the anxious generation when everybody else said it was impossible. So I feel like I'm talking too much, Jeff, so I get excited about this. So my apology, you go right back in there and I'll work on things later.
No, I appreciate it. We're talking to Dr. Tom Rainer, and his brand new book is The Anxious Generation Goes to Church, What the Research Says About What Younger Generations Need and Want from Your Church. I think it's very important for pastors to understand, remember back what it was like to be a kid, and then factor in, as Tom Rainer says, factor in the smartphone and social media, and you just multiply that by a huge factor because it is way more difficult. We'll be right back.
This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Tom Rainer. The Anxious Generation Goes to Church. Tom, you had alluded to the fact of a story of a church that had a lot of older people, seasoned saints, as we like to call them, and they were thinking about, hey, we might have to shut the doors of the church, but what changed for them?
So I was referring to, again, not trying to overpromote my book or say it's a silver bullet, but they were reading Pray and Go together, which is a part of a ministry called the Hope Initiative. And it's a 30-day process to just ask God, how do I need to change my mind instead of looking my heart, instead of looking inward, to look outward? In the midst of that, one senior adult lady, and I'm going to say close to 80 years old, because the median age of the small congregation was in the 70s. So the youth department really began in their 60s. So this lady was around 80 years old, and the congregation had dwindled down to about 50 in attendance, and they said they were just watching to see who was going to die next in order to try to determine when the doors were going to close. Well, the Lord worked in this one lady, and she said, "I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I think I'm supposed to reach young people." She didn't say that her peers at the church laughed at her, but she did express that there was doubt. And as a result, she prayed, and God just put in her heart and mind, how about single moms? Well, she had been a single mom in her earlier years. Mm-hmm. And she remembered the challenges of raising a child without a dad in the home. And she remembered wishing that there was someone for her. So she just posted something on Facebook. "Hey, we're going to have a Bible study at my church." And it was right before the worship service. "If any of you are single moms, bring your kids with you. We'll just let them play in here and we'll have a Bible study." Well, 10 showed up the first time, but also that 10 included about twice as many kids. Mm. So she ended up having a Bible study with 30 people in it. Now, 20 of them participating, they were probably distracting in a good way. Yeah. But and here's what happens when you reach single moms: who are you, else are you reaching? You're reaching kids. And the church became decidedly younger. And even more important than that, most of these moms became followers of Christ, and more came as well. Mm-hmm. The church became vibrant because they knew that they could reach this younger generation. Now, I'm going to let you ask a question, Jeff, because I got a lot of things on my mind right now. But I just want to talk about at some point what happens when they come to church.
Well, you know, just as you were talking, Tom, I've been thinking, you know, from a Wayne McDill, Dr. Wayne McDill, you might know him. He was my preaching professor at Southeastern Seminary. And he would tell us in the preparation of sermons, he said, try and get into the minds of the listener. And so think about the single mom, and think about the older guy that lost his wife, and think about the kid that is dealing with issues at school or issues on social media. And he said, and so that they have connection points. And so when we think about that with the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha, because you have to force yourself to do that. It's not natural when you're in your 60s to start thinking like that. And I can't even go back in my own life because it's so different now for a 15-year-old than when I was 15. So how would you, based on the research, how would you encourage pastors if we're going to think like a 15-year-old anxious girl or boy, what would we need to be thinking?
Well, one of the things that is endemic to this generation, and by the way, if your listeners hear this, there is a massive storm outside. So I hope the thunder and lightning did not provide too many distractions. But the first thing you do to get into their minds and their hearts is you ask the question, where is the void? Now, obviously, there is a Jesus void there because many of them are not followers of Christ. So the gospel is paramount in this. But maybe some other surfaces earlier, you have the void of loneliness, a void that is loneliness. And I don't think we even begin to fathom how lonely this generation is. Mm-hmm. They have not felt connection through digital media. They have felt superficial relationships, mm-hmm. but not connection. And here's the cool thing. If we develop, if I am a pastor and I say, you've got these lonely young people out there, and if you want to reach them, why don't you reach out to them? Why don't you find someone, say, I want to take you to a meal? And even, why don't you invite them to church? Because what are we finding out? Two-thirds of the Gen Z are telling us that if someone invited them to church of any age, mm-hmm. and go with them in the church, which is critical, they don't want to walk in by themselves, they would go. We got two-thirds of these young people who have explicitly told us that they will go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens when the anxious generation goes to church? Well, they hear the Word of God preach. That goes into their mind instead of social media. They develop relationships that are analog instead of digital. They get to know people. No church is perfect. They're going to see it's messy. Most churches would not try to fool themselves to say that it's going to be this perfect holy place. It's normal in many ways, but they begin to have things go into their minds, offsets and neutralizes much of what has gone into their minds to this point. The church, through the preaching of the word, through the fellowship of the saints, through the gathering of small groups, through the activities with other Christians, the church is now becoming the antidote to the toxicity that is in their minds, that is them, the anxious generation. That is good news, and that is why I think people like Jonathan Haidt, the author of The Anxious Generation, that I made, The Anxious Generation Goes to Church, I think that's why he's hinting to churches, help. Help something, because he sees the possibility, even if he does not have the belief, he sees the possibility.
Tom, when you think about church, you know, for a long time we were saying, you know, if we build it, they'll come, and have an attractional model. And I think some of those things, you can have special things, and it's an inviting point. We have something coming up that we're encouraging our folks to invite these people to. But just the day in, day out church, loving the Lord, preaching the word, lifting up Jesus, loving people. We have what no one else has in that regard, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. I mean, Disneyland doesn't have that. Disney World doesn't have that. Some cult doesn't have that. And so tell us a little bit about that, just to encourage us. I know in one of your other books, you said you're an obnoxious, optimistic person. I do want to get you to unpack that. But just some encouragement to pastors and church leaders saying, hey, even if you have a small church and you're not necessarily seeing a lot right now, God has a plan. God wants to use you.
Just finished the research and wrote the manuscript for a book that will be calling The Revival of the Analog Church. I'm not trying to confuse too many books out there. I think I've mentioned three right already. But the thesis behind the book is the churches that are really reaching people are doing so person to person and in person. There's nothing wrong with digital. Digital has been a blessing. Digital is a blessing. It has communicated the gospel to the far reaches. The digital was almost panacea during the pandemic, and digital continues to be a way we can give and we can listen and we can participate. However, what we're now finding is this in-person and person-to-person is really that which creates the relationship that is going to cause these people to heal and also going to cause us to grow. And so the good news is, okay, your pastor may be looking at, we get this quite often, well, there's this big church down the road and they have all these programs and all these things on. What do we do with this? Well, you know what? You don't have to be the big church, number one. You can be who you are. Number two, the most important thing you can do is connect with people and love them, which does not take any money, which does not take any programmatic endeavor, if you truly love them. And number three, the anxious generation, particularly Gen Z and probably Gen Alpha, they're coming back. And this is the opportunity now to reach people that perhaps we have not reached in ages. Now, what happened generationally? My generation, are you a boomer, Jeff?
Born in 62.
Yeah, you're a young boomer. Boomers born 46 to 64, so you're a young boomer. My generation went into church with somewhat of a me too, or what are you going to do for me lately? What are you going to do for me lately? You may recall the old Burger King commercial, hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders, don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us hold it your way. That was have it your way. That was the counter to McDonald's that wouldn't cook the burger anyway, but their way.
Right.
So many of our generation went into churches and we started saying, well, we want it our way. We want church our way. And it created this movement that was more about meeting needs at a superficial level than letting people become true disciples of Christ where they can meet needs. And that is not a critique of any size church. That is a critique of what happened in many churches. Now, what we have found is if we invest our time, our love, our heart in these young people, we're not only going to change a generation, I think we're going to see a revival in our land. I cannot prophetically say that, but I see enough evidence where I am encouraged. And yes, I am that obnoxious optimist, and I continue to be.
Tom, in your research of churches, do you see a specific ministry area in the church that is maybe the most difficult? It seems like for us, finding a student pastor, keeping a student pastor, a guy that really loves the students and is going to invest, harder and harder to find. And people that do that don't want to do it for very long because it's a hard job, and that's dealing with a hard stage in life. What is your research shown on that?
Well, you're dealing with a demographic reality. That is, a small number of people are at the age where people were typically student pastors. So you've got this, you had high birth rates when we were at our student pastor boom and our youth ministry boom. And those, they're not enough of them, just not enough people. So there's a demographic reality. But the second thing is, many of those who are in student ministry went into church planting. That's great. But that became the path for many that would normally go into a student ministry. So what do? We are going to have to equip the saints. We're going to have to equip the members. We're going to have to reinvent, rethink what it means to have staff or even co-vocational persons to start leading ministries in our church where we wouldn't normally do that. The old path of, hey, we got to get this pastor, this staff member, and check off, and they're going to lead it. That might not be a path that most churches can take. And it might be an opportunity, Jeff, for us to start equipping the saints to do the work ministry, and maybe calling out and calling up co-vocational people, not to leave their job in the marketplace, but to come alongside and to provide ministry leadership where there are no people. Here is a fact. There are not enough student ministers in the United States to fill the vacancies. Here's another fact. There are not enough people in their 40s, mid-40s, mid-30s to mid-40s to fill pastoral openings either. Both of those are demographic realities. It's a result of birth rates, and it is a result of fewer people going into vocational ministry. So what it means for us, this is an opportunity to call out the called into co-vocational ministry instead of just expecting to hire another staff person.
Tom, do you feel like with the way things are going in our country with all the reforms that Trump is making in government and kind of, he's attacked woke ideology head on. You know, there are only two genders. We're getting all the biological males out of female sports. He's done a lot of good things that we would applaud. But we've always said on this program, Real Truth for Today, that all falls flat unless it's connected to a spiritual revival in America. Do you see that we're on the cusp of that?
I do. I'm grateful for when the symptoms are addressed, which is what you just said. You know, the symptoms of gender confusion, the symptoms that you have mentioned, the wokeness that is there, those are all symptoms. But now, that it is our opportunity to address the heart issues that can make these changes more permanent and more desirable of people. So, yeah, I'm celebrating many of the changes that are taking place. But again, those are symptomatic. Those aren't causative. And so we who are in the local church, you and me, Jeff, and all of these people who are in this great local church that we serve, they have the opportunity to address the heart. We have the opportunity to address the heart. And that's going to make more change than a political system can through symptomatic issues. So that's what I celebrate. Man, I'm looking at the clock. I'm thinking, this has been too quick, too much. But I'll stop on that one.
Well, I've enjoyed it, Tom. Thank you so much for being my guest today. The book is called The Anxious Generation Goes to Church by Dr. Tom Rainer. I encourage you to pick up a copy, especially parents, especially pastors. Know what's going on in the life of your teenager and know that God has the answer. And as we put God's word into practice, we can see Him do great things. So God bless you, Tom. And thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. Go out, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And God will use you as His witness. God bless.